They told me Jack Nguyen was a tech visionary. Clean, brilliant, untouchable. They said Huang was gone, vanished into the shadows. But when I opened the books, I found more than just numbers. I found whispers of offshore accounts, a trail of red tape, and a blueprint for financial corruption that reached the highest echelons of power. This isn't just a story about scams and bureaucracy. It's about the sinister cases hidden behind polished facades. I'm Adrienne Cole, and this is the true story of how I unveiled the truth. Welcome to Shadows of Justice. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The whisper beneath the ledger. You don't realize how many people have something to hide until you're the one holding the flashlight. In my line of work, you don't wait for the truth to show itself. You dig for it. With bloody nails if you have to. That's what brought me back to the city. Not ambition. Not justice. Just a single call. On a Tuesday, I was supposed to be off-grid. Adrienne, we have something you'll want to look at. I almost didn't answer. But the name they dropped next? Jack Nguyen, stopped me cold. I'd heard of Jack. Anyone following the trail of fintech and cryptocurrency had. A digital pioneer, they said. Visionary. He built Verity Nova on the promise of transparency. A tech platform to eliminate financial corruption through blockchain verification. At least, that's what the press releases said. But my contact at the State Financial Crimes Division whispered the truth behind the press kits. Jack's company might be a front. We've got rumors of shell transfers, offshore accounts, and a woman named Huang, who just went off radar. I agreed to take the case, but I didn't tell them why I really said yes, because Huang and I, we'd crossed paths before. And back then, she got away. The elevator to Verity Nova's office smelled like cedar and burned coffee. The kind of place where secrets dress well. I stepped into the 42nd floor's silent lobby and was met with glass, steel, and an unnerving calm. Everyone worked like ghosts, silent, heads down, no eye contact. That's how you know something's wrong. Not when people panic, but when they don't. Jack's assistant, a boy barely old enough to rent a car, brought me into his office. I wasn't sure what I expected. Maybe arrogance. Defensiveness. But instead, I got charm. He stood, smiled. Ms. Cole, right? I've heard of your work. Forensic reconstruction. Off-the-record deep dives. They call you the bloodhound behind half the justice tales on that podcast everyone's obsessed with. I didn't smile back. I'm not here for flattery. Jack, I'm here for your books. And just like that, the smile dropped. That first meeting gave me exactly what I needed. Tension. A man pretending not to sweat while I scrolled through reports. But it was what I didn't see that made me uneasy. The ledgers were too clean. Too balanced. I'd seen financial scams before. Messy ones. Desperate ones. This wasn't that. This was curated. That night, I ran his name through three dark web crawlers. Nothing. No priors. No scandals. But Huang? That was different. She'd been tied to a financial crimes task force takedown in Thailand, then vanished before the trial. Suspected ties to Eastern European money laundering. No confirmed arrests. No convictions. Like a ghost with a briefcase. Day two. I met with Jack again, this time in private. I brought files from a forensic audit done 6 months prior by an investor who died suddenly of natural causes. Heart attack, no prior conditions. The man had been planning to go public with allegations of misuse of investor funds. His notes were incomplete, but he'd found inconsistencies in Huang's funding structure. Hidden behind the walls of red tape and LLCs registered to abandoned buildings in Malta and Cyprus, Huang brought in our seed money, Jack admitted. Without her, we wouldn't have survived. But you never wondered where her money came from? I asked. He looked away. And that was answer enough. By day five, I had everything I needed to believe Jack wasn't just some naive founder. He was either willfully blind or expertly insulated. And the insulation? It came in the form of Huang, whom I now believed was pulling more strings than he realized. But what cracked this case open wasn't the finances. It was a photo. A grainy image emailed to me from an untraceable sender. A backdoor photo taken through blinds, showing Huang meeting with a well-known fixer. A man tied to election rigging and sinister cases across Europe. He wasn't supposed to be in the U.S. That photo changed everything. The next morning, I got a call from my old friend at Interpol. We've been tracking a woman matching Huang's description. She's been spotted transferring assets linked to blacklisted entities. You want the file? He sent it. And what I saw chilled me. Not just bank statements, but donation records, political bribes, Bookstagram influencers unknowingly paid to promote products tied to shell companies, all orchestrated to shift public perception. Huang wasn't just embezzling. She was rewriting the narrative. That night, I didn't sleep. I pulled out an old recorder and whispered into it. Something I hadn't done since the case that nearly broke me. Entry 1. I think I've found the tip of something massive. Bigger than Jack. Bigger than Huang. This isn't just one of those true crime stories. This is a goddamn blueprint for manipulating the financial future of entire countries. And I don't think I'm the only one looking anymore. As I shut the blinds in my apartment, something flickered in the alleyway below. A car. Dark. Engine off. Lights off. Just sitting there. Watching. I told myself it was nothing. But deep down, I knew Chapter 1 had just ended. And someone didn't want there to be a Chapter 2. The return of a ghost. They teach you in investigative training to ignore coincidences, because they don't exist. Coincidences are stories we tell ourselves to stay calm when something impossible is staring us in the face. Like the moment I opened my laptop the next morning and found an encrypted message waiting. No subject line. No sender name. Just a single file. My confession. Unedited. Untraceable. I didn't need to guess who it was from. Huang. I stared at that screen for what felt like hours, the cursor blinking like a ticking clock. I ran it through every decryption tool I had access to. No malware. No trap. Just Huang's voice. She didn't sound afraid. She didn't sound angry. She sounded deliberate. If you're listening to this, Adrienne, then you're smarter than most. Congratulations. But this isn't about Jack. It never was. He was just the sweet face I needed. Clean hands. Believable eyes. And I knew he'd never ask the right questions. You want the truth? Start at the end. That's where all good deceptions begin. Then the message cut off. No coordinates. No names. No threats. Just that one haunting whisper of power. Wrapped in calm. I didn't sleep that night. I reviewed every client Huang ever worked with. From Vietnamese telecom billionaires to financial crime suspects out of Warsaw. I began to piece together her digital shadow, chasing scraps of VPN pings, digital handoffs, deepfake identities, and a disturbing number of vanishing whistleblowers. Her money? It was everywhere. Foundations, NGOs, crypto wallets, all passed through a black hole of offshore accounts, written in code names and cover firms. One caught my eye. Nova Blind Holdings, registered in the Cayman Islands. It had been inactive for 2 years. But 6 days ago, someone moved $2, $4 million through it. I ran a trace. Guess whose name came up on the transfer chain? Jack's. I confronted him the next morning. He looked like hell. Red eyes, the corner of his lip twitching as he spoke. I didn't know about the Nova Blind transfer. I swear, Huang set up all the early infrastructure. I just handled the tech. I slammed a folder down on his desk. You're telling me you built a blockchain verification company and you never looked at your own chain? That shut him up. I pressed harder. You were either too scared to look, or too comfortable not knowing. He whispered it before I could finish. Both. I walked out before I said something I couldn't take back. But as I hit the street, I realized something far worse. I was being followed. Two people, maybe three. No cameras, no obvious tail. But the way the black sedan circled the block when I crossed, the way a man outside the cafe never touched his coffee. It wasn't random. They weren't just following me. They were watching who I talked to. I called an old source in the Department of Justice, told him everything I'd found, the bureaucracy, the red tape, the digital fingerprints, the burner logs, and Huang's encrypted message. He promised to escalate it. 2 hours later, his voicemail was deactivated. The deeper I dug, the worse it got. I uncovered a buried report from a Swiss bank that had flagged a set of unusual transactions involving shell companies used in financial scams. The flagged parties? All had connections to a supposedly defunct consulting firm called Nine Black Leaves. Guess who was on the board? Huang's name wasn't there. But her alias, Chithan, was. A name she used 5 years ago in a whistleblower scandal that took down two ministers in Laos. She didn't just hide. She shapeshifted. A week later, I got an unmarked envelope at my apartment door. No postage. Just a drive and a single phrase scrawled on the inside. For every story you tell, someone else pays the price. I plugged the drive in, knowing I shouldn't. What I saw? Surveillance footage of me. Me in the cafe. Me at the hotel. Me in my home. And worse, a file titled Justice Tales Adrian Cole Backup. Move. Someone had my personal archive, the cases I'd worked, the names of victims, confidential interviews I'd locked away for years. They weren't just trying to scare me. They wanted me to stop. But Huang had made a mistake. Buried in the drive metadata was a single IP address that pinged at the time the file was created. It led me to a high-rise on the outskirts of the city. I waited, watched, and then, 3 days in, I saw her, Huang, not in disguise, not on the run, walking confidently into the building with a man I didn't recognize, until I ran his face through facial recognition. His name was Stephen Marek, XUS, Treasury, now retired, also known for testifying against federal oversight of international crypto transfers. It hit me like a punch in the ribs. This wasn't about money laundering anymore. It was about influence, control. I made a decision that night. I left a decoy trail, turned off all my trackers, rerouted my digital ID, faked a browser crash report to make them think I was going dark, and I started a new recording. Log 2. Huang isn't just a criminal. She's a conductor, an architect of silence. And Jack? I think he was the bait to lead me right to her. If this is my last entry, know this. The truth is bigger than anyone suspects. And someone, maybe all of them, want it buried beneath another decade of silence. As I ended the recording, my phone buzzed. A single text. You're getting close. See you soon. No name. No number. Just those words. And the countdown had begun. Inside the Hive. It's funny what silence sounds like when you know someone is watching. I didn't sleep. I barely ate. For 3 days, I studied Huang's pattern, her comings and goings from the high-rise on West 83rd, the way she greeted the security guards like old friends, the way no one stopped her. No hesitation, no keycard swipes, just trust. Too much trust. Something was wrong. That building didn't house a startup or a shell firm. It wasn't a financial hub. It was a nerve center. 24-hour surveillance systems, redundant power supplies, and a rooftop comms array disguised as HVAC units. This wasn't about money anymore. It was about control. I disguised myself as a courier. Fake badge. Burner phone. Pressure-sensitive glasses to record everything. The moment I walked through the lobby, I knew I'd stepped inside something built to erase people. No reception desk. No visible logos, just rows of blacked-out doors, frosted glass conference rooms, and a strange humming in the walls, like the place breathed. I found the name Unit 9A on the tenant directory, half-peeled and hand-etched. That was the one Huang entered 2 days ago. As I approached, two men exited, both armed, one with an earpiece, military posture, not corporate, not tech. Private security. That's when it hit me. This wasn't just a shell company. It was a secured operational node, probably one of several, housing decades of financial corruption, offshore account manipulation, and corporate espionage cloaked in encrypted databases and bureaucratic smoke. I ducked into a maintenance closet and plugged my recorder into the building's access panel. I hacked into the internal logs, not to steal files, but to uncover movement. What I found stunned me. Every keycard in that building was registered under a fake name, all originating from foreign embassies. Russia, Singapore, Turkey, and buried in the logs, a passcode linked to someone I never expected. Jack. His ID was used to access the building 3 days earlier. He lied to me. When I confronted him, I didn't give him time to spin. I barged into his apartment, dropped the printouts on his coffee table, and said one word, "Explain." He froze. Not like a man caught, like a man reliving a trauma. "I went there," he whispered. "They said Huang was in trouble, that she'd crossed someone too powerful. I thought I could help her. Or at least, understand." "Understand what?" "Jack?" "That I was never running Verity Nova." He told me everything. Huang had approached him 4 years ago. Not with an idea, but with a script. A full business model, a launch plan, a VC list, and a promise. If he played his part, he'd never have to work again. She taught him how to answer questions, what to say to investors, what not to ask. "She used me like a puppet," he said, voice cracking. "But I let her, because it felt good, because I believed we were building something honest, even when the truth screamed otherwise. I wanted to hate him, but as he showed me a folder on his laptop labeled Mirrors, everything changed. It was Huang's real project. Mirrors wasn't about crypto. It was an AI-driven behavioral data tool, disguised as a finance engine. Its true purpose? To predict and manipulate financial markets based on social unrest, disaster patterns, and even mass online emotion. And the worst part? It had already been tested. Riots in Chile, panic buying in Southeast Asia, election shocks in Eastern Europe. She'd triggered them, or at least nudged them, using financial pressure points and influencer control networks, the Bookstagram scandals, the sinister cases tied to collapsing economies, all seeded, all orchestrated. Huang wasn't laundering money. She was rewriting the algorithm of the world. That's when the power went out. Jack's apartment went dark, not a flicker. Just silence. And then, a knock. I reached for my Glock, motioned Jack to stay low, and moved toward the door. Another knock. Slower this time. More deliberate. "Ms. Cole," a voice called softly. "We'd like to speak with you." No badge. No name. Just calm threat. I stayed silent. They knocked once more. Then they left. But I knew this wasn't over. They wanted me to know they could find me. That they were in the walls now. In my air. That night, I fled, switched hotels, burned the burner phone, went full blackout. Before I left, Jack handed me a drive. "It's everything," he said. "Emails, footage, logs, the raw back end of the Mirrors system. But if you publish it, you'll never stop running." I nodded, because I'd made peace with that long ago. I uploaded the files to a secure Mirror server in Iceland. Set a dead man's switch. If anything happened to me, the truth would be unveiled. But I wasn't just scared for myself. I was scared for Jack. Because if Huang was still watching, and I knew she was, then Jack had just signed his own death warrant. The offer. I didn't expect the envelope. It arrived without a return address, slipped under my apartment door. Inside, a single sheet of paper bore a message in crisp, serif font. "Miss Cole, we need to talk. Huang." No threats, no demands. Just an invitation. I stared at it, heart pounding. After everything, after the surveillance, the encrypted messages, the shadowy figures, Huang wanted a conversation. I knew better than to walk into a trap. but I also knew I couldn't ignore it. The meeting place was a high-end cafe in the financial district, the kind where deals are made over lattes and croissants. I arrived early, scanning the room for exits, noting the patrons, the staff, the security cameras. Huang entered precisely at noon, dressed in a tailored suit, her demeanor calm and composed. She approached my table with a slight smile. "Adrian," she said, taking a seat across from me. "Thank you for coming." I said nothing, waiting. She sighed. "I imagine you have questions." I leaned forward. "Why now? Why me?" Huang sipped her coffee before answering. "Because you're the only one who sees the bigger picture. The only one who understands that this isn't just about Jack or Verity Nova. It's about the system. The system you exploited," I countered. She nodded. "Yes, but also the system that allowed it, the bureaucracy, the red tape, the complacency. I didn't create the cracks. I just knew where to find them." I studied her, searching for any sign of remorse. There was none. "What do you want from me?" I asked. "To tell the real story," she said, "not the sanitized version the media will spin. The truth about how financial corruption permeates every level of power. How offshore accounts and financial scams are just symptoms of a deeper disease." I shook my head. "You think painting yourself as a whistleblower will absolve you?" "I'm not seeking absolution," she replied. "I'm offering you a chance to expose the truth, to go beyond true crime stories and delve into the mechanisms that make them possible." I considered her words. Part of me wanted to walk away, to let the authorities handle it. But another part, the part that had seen too many cases buried under politics and influence, knew this might be the only opportunity to truly unveil the extent of the rot. "I'll need everything," I said. "Documents, recordings, names." Huang smiled. "You'll have them. But be prepared. The story you're about to tell will shake foundations." As she left, I felt a mix of apprehension and determination. This was more than a case. It was a reckoning. And I was ready to face it. The web tightens. I had always believed that truth was a beacon, guiding, illuminating, unwavering. But as I delved deeper into Huang's labyrinth, I realized that truth could also be a snare, ensnaring those who sought it with threads of peril and deceit. The documents Huang provided were a Pandora's box. They detailed a complex network of shell companies, political donations, and media manipulation. Each file was a thread, and together they wove a tapestry of financial corruption that spanned continents. One name kept surfacing: Stephen Merrick, a former U.S. Treasury official, now a consultant for international finance firms. His signature appeared on several documents, authorizing transfers to offshore accounts linked to political campaigns and nonprofit organizations. The implications were staggering. I reached out to a contact at the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN. Over a secure line, I shared my findings. There was a pause, then a terse response. "Be careful, Adrian. You're treading on dangerous ground." That night, my apartment was broken into. Nothing was stolen, but my files were rifled through, my computer accessed. A clear message: "We know what you're doing." I couldn't ignore the warning. I relocated to a secure location and continued my investigation, more determined than ever. I arranged a clandestine meeting with Jack. We met in a dimly lit parking garage, the air thick with tension. "Jack," I began, "Huang's documents implicate you in this web of deceit. I need to know the truth." He looked weary, shadows under his eyes. "I was naive," he admitted. "Huang offered me a chance to be part of something revolutionary. I didn't ask questions. I didn't want to know." "Did you benefit financially?" I pressed. He hesitated. "Yes, but I thought it was legitimate. I never imagined it was tied to financial scams and political manipulation." I believed him. Jack was a pawn, manipulated by Huang's charisma and vision. Determined to expose the truth, I compiled a comprehensive report and submitted it to a trusted journalist. The story made headlines. sinister cases of political corruption unveiled. The fallout was immediate. Investigations were launched, arrests made. Huang disappeared, her whereabouts unknown, but the victory was hollow. The system remained intact, its foundations shaken but not broken. I returned to my apartment, the weight of the truth heavy on my shoulders. As I sat at my desk, a package arrived. Inside was a single sheet of paper. "You've done well, Adrienne, but this is just the beginning." H. The game was far from over. The reckoning. The weight of the truth pressed heavily on my shoulders as I prepared to confront the final pieces of the puzzle. Huang's intricate web of financial corruption, offshore accounts, and bureaucratic manipulation had ensnared countless individuals and institutions. But now, the moment of reckoning had arrived. I arranged a meeting with a trusted contact at the Department of Justice, someone who had been instrumental in previous true crime stories I had investigated. We met in a discreet location, away from prying eyes and ears. "I have the evidence," I said, handing over a secured drive containing all the data Huang had provided. "This exposes the full extent of the operation." My contact reviewed the files, his expression growing graver with each passing minute. "This is explosive," he finally said. "But it's also dangerous. You're going to make a lot of powerful enemies." "I'm aware," I replied, "but the public deserves to know the truth." The next few days were a whirlwind. The DOJ launched a series of coordinated raids, targeting shell companies and financial institutions implicated in the scheme. High-profile arrests were made, and the media was abuzz with the unfolding scandal. Jack, meanwhile, had gone into hiding, fearing retribution. I managed to reach him through a secure channel. "It's over," I told him. "Huang's network is dismantled." He sounded relieved, but also apprehensive. "What about Huang?" "She's vanished," I admitted. "No trace." As the dust settled, I reflected on the journey. The shadows of justice had been illuminated, but at a cost. Lives disrupted, reputations destroyed, and the ever-present risk of retaliation. But I knew that exposing the truth was worth it. The financial scams and sinister cases that had plagued the system were now out in the open, and steps were being taken to prevent such abuses in the future. I documented the entire investigation, turning it into a comprehensive report that would serve as a cautionary tale and a guide for future investigators.